Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Patient Navigator Community Call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. If anyone should require operator assistance, please press star, then the zero on your touch-tone telephone. As a reminder, this call is being recorded. I would like to introduce your host for today's conference, Ms. Shalpa Patel. Ma'am, you may begin.
Thank you. Hello and welcome to the first Patient Navigator Community Call. We appreciate all of you joining us today. I am joined by fellow Navigator team member Susan Rogers, who serves as the National Patient Navigator Manager, and Julie Movid, who helps with Patient Navigator site visit training. And Dr. Gluckman, who will be the moderator for today's call and serves as the physician advisor to the Patient Navigator Committee, and Nancy Albert, who serves as the chair to the Patient Navigator Committee. We want this call to be as engaging as possible and encourage all of you to join the conversations by talking about your own individual experiences. Everyone on today's call has established their Navigator teams and is in the process of or has submitted their baseline data and Navigator assessments. Through this process, you all have been able to understand your current performance, set hospital goals, and start identifying areas for improvement. The focus of today's call will be to have an open dialogue about the challenges and opportunities hospitals have faced with starting this program. I want to quickly do a round of introductions, so I'm going to go through everyone that we have on the line right now from the different hospitals that are participating in the program. We have Allison Walters from Trident Medical Center, Angie Bates from Huntsville Hospital, Anna Dermentian from UCLA, sorry, I'm having a technical difficulty with the names coming up. Susan or Julie, can you all see the names that are coming up? I can
continue, Shilpa. Betsy Gaskin, playing it from Wake Med. Camille, from Montefiore. Christine Kruger from Einstein. Dana Rowan from IU Health, Janine Moore from Wake Med, Karen Mile from St. Mary's, Kristen Hill from Baptist, Laura Conway from Baptist, Dr. Kovacs from IU, Renee Swanson from Providence, Renee Billingsley from Ironstone, Philly, Rebecca Walton from Albert Einstein, Paul Kelly from St. Mary's, Pam Hedrick from Western Maryland, Michelle Gaithier from Wyoming Medical Center. We have Kathleen Hewitt on from the ACC. We have Dr. Shaw from California Pacific, Shelley Bedlow from Vanderbilt, Susan Simonchi from Einstein, Suzanne Proctor from MedStar Health, Tammy Tyner from Trident Medical Center, Wanda Johnson from MedStar Health, Dr. Weintraub from Christiana Care, Wanda Johnson from MedStar, Washington Hospital.
Thanks, Susan.
You're
welcome. And with that, I'm going to give it to Dr. Gluckman to help get us started.
Shilpa, thanks so much, and it's an enormous pleasure to be on with this esteemed group of individuals from across the country today. This is the first of our calls, and I tend to be a fairly informal person, and we want this to be, as Shilpa has said, as interactive as possible. And we're going to have different themes on these calls as we go along through the program. Just to remind everyone, this is a phenomenal program, and you all are part of the initial cohort of hospitals that were selected to participate in this program. There is a second cohort that is several months removed. Many of these sites may not even have their initial site visit, which all of you have had until the first quarter of 2015. And so we're doing our best to try and marry the two programs, even though it's separated in time, and at some point we may even get to a point where we have shared community calls amongst all of the groups. The theme for today is really highlighting successes and challenges that all of you have had thus far, and hopefully it provides an opportunity to center all of you and center those of us who have been involved in the development of the program to better understand what's working and what's not. to that extent, we're going to really leave the lines open. And so I'm going to ask the moderator to unmute the lines and to remind you if it's possible to keep your phone muted if you're not speaking. But we want this to be very interactive. And to that extent, I'm going to be doing my best, if possible, to call on some of you. We've actually solicited information from you about challenges that you've had, things that you've done that have been successful. And as we move along, we'd like to be able to open up as much dialogue on today's call. Just before doing that, I do want to highlight that we're trying to, at least by the first of the year, have a forum for much more interaction that occurs at least virtually through our listserv. And so we'll be sending information in a forthcoming emails about how better to interact with one another. I know some of you have even reached out to one another thus far. And we want this to hopefully be a shared community where we begin to really learn from each other about best practices that may be process-based or that may be purely about data collection overall. So with that, I'll turn it back to the moderator and ask if we can just open up the lines for everyone, and then we'll delve in for the next 50 minutes or so, focusing in on successes and challenges.
Thank you. At this time, all lines are open. To minimize background noise, we ask that you do mute your phone. If you do not have a mute feature, you may use the *6 to mute or to unmute your phone. I would like to turn the call back over to Dr. Glockman. You may begin.
Thank you very, very much. And again, we want this to be open. So if there is something that I am saying that is incorrect, you have questions, concerns, comments, please do not hesitate at a moment's notice to share your input. It should not be me talking. It should be all of you largely today. So in roughly the next 50 minutes or 45 minutes, we wanted to break this down into both successes and challenges that we've faced thus far. And to that extent, I think it's always hard when you start with challenges. So I want to highlight some of the successes, and we're going to actually call out some individuals to share some of their individual experiences. Many of you may have the individual metrics in front of you that and have gone through your whole scorecard process, but they're in sort of an overview or an assessment of how our Navigator hospitals have performed thus far. Some of the metrics that stand out that people have done a really good job in, that they have either accrued information or been able to enter into processes that actually make this very successful, have been success metric 6, which is around the heart failure performance measures, success metric 11, which deals with discharge summaries, including information related to the summary of the hospitalization, updated medication list, and importantly, making that data available to follow-up clinicians to improve that continuity of care, and success metric 12 for heart failure and MI patients in terms of providing educational materials about self-care and plans and medication. The two areas that I want to focus in on that several sites have done well, and I'm going to call out a couple of sites to ask people to share their experiences, is for me personally, I not only play this role in terms of helping the larger group develop some of the content and work with them, but I'm also one of the physician leads at Providence St. Vincent Medical Center in Portland, Oregon. And I've got to say that all of the work that the Navigator program is intended to do in terms of identifying gaps in care related to myocardial infarction and heart failure and figuring out where quality improvement can be initiated to close those gaps has really been an accelerator of what we hopefully should have been doing all along. And to me, the most exciting part about this is that the Navigator program has provided, in some cases, means and a structure between or underlying getting a bunch of individuals that may have worked very much in siloed fashion, pharmacists, care coordinators, discharge planners, physical therapists, cardiac rehab specialists, clinicians that are physicians and nurses, to all come together in a forum that they may not have otherwise normally done. And so I think this multidisciplinary team engagement has been a real, real success for me personally, for Renee, who is our lead at Providence, who will be talking just a little bit. And I'd like to just highlight a couple of sites. And Angie, I think you're on the call from Huntsville. I didn't know if you wanted just to speak about in a few minutes, just a couple of minutes, and I'll ask Anna from UCLA to share your experiences about how this program has fostered that multidisciplinary team engagement. So I'll open it up to Angie first, if you could share your experiences.
Yes, sir. Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity.
I think multidisciplinary, one of the first things that comes to mind is we were able to pilot a program with a PharmD that we have here to do some transitional care and education for our patients who are going home after an acute MI. And we were lucky that the pharmacy had already started moving in that direction, so we were able to kind of snatch her up and pilot that program on our units here. So far, that's going pretty well. The most difficult part of that was identifying which patients she could would most benefit being seen, because at this point, we don't have a tool to risk stratify for the people who are at high risk for readmission. I think some of the other things is we have a heart failure clinic that was already established, and it had kind of gotten separated as more of an outpatient, and we were inpatient, and so we've been working very hard on bridging that gap so that our heart failure clinic is kind of a bigger portion of our inpatient management so that we can more easily transition those patients from the acute care setting into the next level of care.
I think those are fantastic examples, and I think it highlights the challenges is that we have many individuals that wear different hats on the inpatient and ambulatory sides, and those individuals often we have to be duplicative in engaging sometimes what are different individuals from nursing, from pharmacy services in both locations, and it means a bigger team overall. Anna, do you want to share some of your experiences just at UCLA of how you've been able to foster together multidisciplinary teams and even operationally how what challenges it's been or how it's been successful thus far?
Yes, thank you so much. This is Anna Dermenchen from UCLA, and I wanted to just share that we did have certain programs in place at UCLA, but everyone was working in silos. We had a heart failure committee that would meet quarterly to review our heart failure data and kind of think about the readmissions, what we can do to improve it. But it was, again, done quarterly basis, and we weren't making much progress. We have a program, a Beat Heart Failure Study, where it's a research group that's studying readmissions, but it has specific criteria, the patients they followed. We have an advanced heart failure clinic that follows less than 10% of our heart failure population outpatient. We've had people who've done evidence-based teach-back projects from nursing, and a pharmacy program that discharges patients and delivers medications at the bedside and gives education. So we've had all these different initiatives, but nothing kind of bringing it together. And we found this forum, the Navigator program, to be that forum where we can invite people that have interest in improving heart failure and MI readmissions, kind of bring it all together. So we started thinking about reorganizing our quarterly committee and kind of asking people to recommit if they want to be involved in the process. And actually, we had a large group, 40 to 50 people that were in the committee, and half of the people decided they could no longer participate. So it was really good to figure out who's committed in this process still. And then we invited people from groups that weren't part of it, like cardiac rehab. We hadn't really engaged before, so we reached out to them, and they've been excited to join us, as well as interventional cardiology, where they see a lot of our MI patients, and they're engaged in the process. So we've asked pharmacy to recommit to this process, care coordination, because they do a lot of the discharge. We figured out their issues, for example, with home health or getting home health on board for patients that need it. So through the process, we've invited a lot of different stakeholders and realize that we each care for this to be better, but then we've been working in silos, and we need to kind of re-energize and bring our efforts together. And so far, it's been really eye-opening experience, and our first kickoff meeting was really good in sharing ideas and coming up with goals that we can all tackle together.
Yeah, this is fantastic. And I do want to call out one thing. You know, all of you were selected as sites because you were engaged and you did a lot of this work well to begin with. And I think the one thing that's a uniform theme that I hear from a lot of the different sites is that you've even found that this program has fostered a means to be able to even engage people more than we ever would have before. And it speaks to the fact that there are many centers around the country that don't even do it to the extent that all of you did before. And so it's exciting for me to hear that level of engagement and, again, breaking down the silos and thinking more, whether it's inpatient to outpatient, or whether it's different groups that are in the hospital that never may have necessarily interacted with one another. So kudos to you. And I will say, the reason in purposely calling out some of you who have been able to either overcome certain challenges or hurdles, or how you've been able to carry out successes, partly is to also identify individuals that when the listserv is more thoroughly up and running, even though it exists today, that we have a forum where somebody, whether it's in the first cohort or the second cohort, who identifies whether it is Angie or Anna or others in different areas, we'd like this to be a really interactive group, even in that virtual forum where you could say, how did you get people together? You know, literally the operations of, you know, how do you get these different disparate groups? Where did you find that a certain number of people became unruly and it was too hard to manage overall? So thank you all for who are going to speak up as we go along with all these community calls, because I think it will foster even more, hopefully offline, but online through the listserv, opportunities to interact with one another. Changing directions just for the last sort of 5 or so minutes for this successes section. One of the other areas that a lot of people have been able to realize successes in improving care thus far, even before the program started, have been the introduction of navigators or transition coaches in the coordination of care overall. And I was hoping that if Rebecca was on from Einstein or Maria was on from Christiana, Rebecca, I don't know if you're on from Einstein, if you're able to share your experiences with having transition coaches. Or Maria, if you're on from Christiana.
Oh, hi, this is Maria from Christiana Hospital. Can you hear me?
We can hear you perfectly.
Oh, okay, great, right. Yes, we have heart failure navigators as part of our heart failure program, and we have them actually following up screening for heart failure patients and actually doing the education, the follow-up phone calls, and all the activities involved with heart failure care. It has helped us tremendously with our measures, but we still struggle to find all the patients in the hospital because we are fairly large. We're almost 1,100 beds. Dr. Weintraub, do you want to add to this?
Well, so, I mean, I think you do a great job of finding all the patients. I'd like to say that you know, this is fitting into a very broad program at Christiana because we've had some of you may know, we've had a large CMMI grant that overlaps this, that's been focused on ischemic heart disease, and so it includes our MI populations. And what this program has allowed us to do is to branch in and include heart failure. And this, as we heard from others, we've been able to integrate all of the different things that we're doing. So navigators and care managers, pharmacists, and physicians working together as a team to make sure that patients get what they need, especially in that critical transition from hospital to home, and make sure that they're well connected with their physicians in the community. So this has just worked in my mind just great in pulling the threads together of all the things that we're doing.
Fantastic. And I just don't know if Bridget's on from Washington Hospital Center, have anything to add in terms of their experience with transition coaches or navigators?
Bridget, this is Wanda Johnson from MedStar Washington Hospital Center. Bridget was not able to be on, but we actually connected with our cardiologists, the major cardiologists in this hospital, and what we were able to do was to get them on board to allow us to be a priority when we call in to make appointments for our patients when they go home. And we are able to make appointments now within the first 5 to 7 days of their discharge. And that was a big step for us.
Perfect. Hi, this is Ileana. I just joined.
Fantastic. I don't know if you... No problem. Thank you for joining. And I would say is, you know, I will do my best with Shulpa and others on the phone to try and continue to identify individuals who, because our job partly offline is to provide a matchmaker forum where people who have been able to be successful, whether it be through navigators, transition coaches, or through multidisciplinary team engagement, we'd like to, presuming it's okay with all of you, and by your participation, we're assuming that it is, be able to call you out in a good way to say that some of you have figured this out, and it would hopefully invite others of you that offline say, we still haven't been able to figure this one out, to crack this nut, to figure out how you've done it. And so for hospitals that are thinking about participating in hiring, engaging transition coaches or navigators, and are wondering, how has this been successful? What are you having them do? I think hopefully we can match people offline together to be able to say, this is the sites, these are the sites that have done this well. And so for the second sort of two-thirds of this, I want to acknowledge that there are a lot of challenges. So many of the metrics that all of you have been asked to look at and the scorecards that have incorporated these metrics into them are largely based upon our national performance measures. A lot of people like to consider performance measures those things that you would otherwise be embarrassed to not do, and yet we all know that there are things that we don't do as well as we otherwise could. What's amazing to me when I went through this personally, I'll give my own anecdote, is that we didn't even know in our own institution, which is a very large matrixed health organization, that there were many individuals who are collecting data in many of these domains that we didn't even know about. And part of the challenges have been data definitions, how one group may define one metric is different than another group. That creates its own challenges. But I got to say, one of the biggest challenges that we've seen thus far is having people understand who's collecting what. Is the data even collectible? And I want to go through several of these metrics that we've had challenges on thus far and have people share some of their experience in terms of how they've been able to access some of the data that some of you on the call may say, I didn't even know we could access at all. And so some of you went through, when you went through your scorecard or actually were doing your sort of inventory of your metrics, might have responded, we can't even do this today. And so we want to use this as an opportunity to springboard into some of those topics. And if we don't get through all the different metrics, that's perfectly fine. What we want is a lot of dialogue and exchange about this, because some of you have figured this out very well and some of you may not overall. And this is really that sharing forum. So one of the metrics that I will say locally for us here was success metric 3. And this was really around patient satisfaction and how we were looking at things like HCAHPS data. And a lot of you are probably familiar that whether it's Prasquini scores and accruing HCAHPS data that way uniquely, you would often get it presented as an institution. I work at Providence St. Vincent Medical Center. We'd say, here are all the different metrics for HCAHPS. But as you all know, for this program, we really wanted this filtered down to the level of how do people perform and how are patients satisfied or not as it relates to MI and heart failure care. So one of the challenges that we didn't know initially that you could do was actually being able to filter your HCAHPS data or patient satisfaction scores related to DRGs. So I'm going to open up to Renee, who I work with at Providence, just to share her experience with doing that. And then we're going to go through several other metrics just to say this was a challenge, and I know it's probably a challenge even though I can't see you nodding or affirming yes for many of you on the phone. Our goal is to sort of share some of these overcoming challenges individually. So I'll turn things over to Renee for a moment just to share her experience in accessing disparate data and patient satisfaction scores.
Hi, this is Renee Swanson from Providence. And we were originally told that we could not filter our Prasquini HCAHPS by DRGs, but to be honest, it was kind of just finding the right person that could direct us, and it's actually part of your report build. So when you build a specific report through Prasquini for your HCAHPS, you select your questions, and then one of your filters, you can actually select your DRGs. Now, this is only for the inpatient side, and Prasquini is actually looking to see how they can incorporate DRGs on the ambulatory side. But at least that was a win for us that we could filter our reports by DRGs. And I did put together like a little cheat sheet. So if anybody is interested in that on how to build your reports in Prasquini and how to filter the specific questions for this metric and selecting your DRGs, I'd be more than happy to share that.
Thanks, Renee. And I just didn't know if anybody in an open forum, if they have questions specifically about this. I also know, and I can only speak to this personally, I think one of the other things, even though it's not a specific success metric, is the reality that a lot of us live in large organizations, in some cases small organizations, that have multiple different data sources. Our data is collected and housed in different areas. And Renee, I just didn't know if you also wanted to speak to sort of the challenges of figuring out who are the right people to talk to get your data from different data sources.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
You were talking about Press Ganey, which is really great that you can do that. Does anyone have any other vendors that they're able to do that sort? We use PRC, and we don't have that ability.
This is Betsy at WakeMed, and we use PRC, and we're able to sort that with no difficulty. Jeannie, do you want to share with them how you did that?
Yes, it was just a matter of working with the representative, kind of like the other lady mentioned, finding the right person there at PRC who could work with us. We didn't have any difficulty once we got to the right person. So really we had to persist through a couple of folks to try to, you know, push for that. But once we found the right person, and I'll be glad to I can email you the name of the person that we made contact with if that would help. But once we found the right person, we had no difficulty at all.
Great. That would be really good if you could send us the right person's name.
So, and again, I would say these are great questions. This is a lot of what we want on these calls, but we know we're not going to be able to cover everything, and I want to reinforce even more so, and we may have to organize the listserv in terms of themes, but as questions come up, our best job will be to monitor that listserv and try and connect all of you to one another, so whether it's Renee or others posting information up there, it helps everybody out to just say this is either how we did it or this is a contact that you may want to speak to overall.
So at this point, how would she know who we are to get us the right person? Do you have a place where it will go through you at this point?
Yeah, Shilpa, do you want to just speak to even briefly just where the listserv is and where it may be even more functional in the weeks and months to come, just so we can have you just speak to essentially the virtual community and how they interact with each other in that?
Sure. So we actually have all of you all on a Patient Navigator listserv, and in the coming weeks, we will be Susan will be sending out a message to all the participants, letting you all know how to ask questions and send emails to the listserv, and this will connect all of you. So anything that anyone wants to share on that listserv, you can do through that forum, and everyone will get those screenshots or those messages. You can also ask questions to one another. So these messages will go directly to your email. And additionally, we're looking at exploring places on the Navigator webpage where we can post some of these templates and resources that you're using at your individual hospital so everyone can have access on the website as well. So we'll send out an announcement on how to use the listserv and how to send messages to connect you all and share information through that forum.
And I think on the listserv, to that point, to follow up, thank you, Shilpa, for that, is I think the goal would be to try and group some of these conversations around specific themes, because some of these may be applicable to you, some may not. Some of you may have recognized challenges where somehow you've been able to lick it and you said, I've got this all figured out, and we would welcome you proactively not asking the question but sharing and saying if anybody has any problems, which has been a big problem for us for months or years, in being able to figure out how to access this data, we just figured it out. We would welcome the opportunity for you to be able to proactively share it on the listserv to say, this is a metric, this is the data that we could not get, we now are able to get it. If anybody else has had this challenge, feel free to reach out to us. We would like it to be as proactive as possible, but also for those of you who are having ongoing data challenges, we would welcome the opportunity for you to pose questions that literally like are, has anybody been able to access this data and filter it down to this level? And I think many of us would benefit on the call from that kind of exchange overall. Any other comments or questions about that?
This is Shelley from Vanderbilt, and I was just wondering who is speaking about having the PRC data.
This was Jeannie Moore from WakeMed in Raleigh, North Carolina.
Jeannie Moore from Raleigh. Wonderful. Thank you.
You're welcome.
And- And we're recording this call. We're doing our best to try and take notes as well. So if there are follow-up comments or questions, I think right this moment you can always feel comfortable in reaching out to Shilpa or any of the other contacts that you have who have been your resource for the site visit or for the Navigator program. We'll attempt to follow up because we know many of the questions may not get answered or everybody's voice may not even be figured out at the conclusion of the program, but we'll do our best to try and connect all of you offline to help with that as well. The other thing is, I think is, and Renee, I just hope that you might be able to speak to this and then we're going to jump to others, is there are certain individuals, and they may have different titles at different facilities, but just speaking to the breadth of individuals that you may have to go into your own institution to access data, and Renee, you might be able to speak to the different types of individuals that you had to meet with who have access to data to be able to secure the data from different data sources. We're going through our own internal challenges about how you consolidate all that data in one location, but Renee, I didn't know if you wanted just to speak to that is beyond sort of the patient satisfaction scores, the different people that you might have had to reach out to access data.
Sure. So this is Renee from Providence. And, you know, our health system here at St. Vincent's has actually been on a newer EMR within the last couple years. So that was kind of one of our challenges initially, being on a new EMR system, and where is the data being housed? Are all the reports being built, and where can I find them? So I had to work with people within our own program all the way up through our system office to try and find data. And the biggest encouragement I can give people is just to be persistent. And a lot of times you'll get a lead on another name that you can work with. So we worked with people in Premier, with our system office, with our heart program statisticians, with our healthcare intelligence. So I was just constantly going to multiple levels of people trying to find reports. And we put in lots of report requests for reports to be built if we couldn't find what we were looking for. And just due to the timeline of needing some of this data, I mean, some of our metrics, we did have to do manual chart abstractions until those reports can be built. The one thing I do say that's really helped me as I've gone along through this process is I created a roadmap for each metric where I'm pulling that data with screenshots and links, just so it makes it easier if I need to find that data again, being able to refer to that. We created an ACC patient navigator leadership team. So that's with our lead physician, Dr. Gleckman, our lead statistician for our statistician department, myself, and then the program manager. And that's where when we were collecting the data, we would go through that and making sure that that was meeting the metric parameters and requirements. So we meet twice a month. It's a great team for me to be able to bounce ideas off, make sure we're heading in the right direction. And then that's the team that also tees up like our agendas for our larger team meetings. And then the other thing that roadmap is helping us do is we've got a request out to build a dashboard that includes all of our metrics plus some additional ones. And then this dashboard, we'll be able to take it back to the team. It's just one way that we're able to pull data easier. But that roadmap with all the links to where those reports are coming from just helps that analyst who will be building that dashboard, makes it a lot easier to find that data.
And I just wanted to add, this has been an unbelievable challenge, and I owe special kudos to Renee for that. But I know each of you on the call have had your own challenges with IT departments, building reports, accessing data. Anna, I know you're down at UCLA, and I know you you're working with your IT department to try and sort of build some of these things in. I didn't know if you wanted to just share some of your experience for automating data collection. I think all of us want to see the day end when we have to do manual chart abstraction. And as much – now, again, this doesn't speak to the quality of the data necessarily. There's ownership that has to exist at that level. But beyond that, the more that we can automate this process, the easier it will be to provide data back in real time to our providers to be able to make real-time, rapid-cycle improvement in terms of quality where gaps exist. And I just didn't know if you wanted to speak to the UCLA experience with this.
Yes, we've had similar challenges. It's been very difficult to find the data and then to find the groups who have ownership of the data. But we have Epic. So we started Epic in 2013 in March, so we've been over a year. But it's still, we've built other reports for outpatient populations, and we're trying to use the same format where we provide our metrics and our define our population and see if we can automate some of that process. But it's in the build phase. It's not something that we have available, but the hospital is willing to work with us to get that done. But it is, when we have the reports, we have to still validate the data, because we've discovered that sometimes the data could be so many different locations, and if you haven't defined that while you're building the report, it could just be picking up from certain places and it's not looking for it everywhere. Also, there's issues with charting. We've discovered that for medication reconciliation, we don't have anywhere that we check that that's been done on admissions or discharge. We just assume it's being done 100%, but, you know, like, so we don't have, it's kind of open our eyes that more work needs to be done in this area. It's just not the automated part.
No, I think that's great. Are there any other comments or questions about this? And we're going to try and go through several topics in the remaining 20 minutes or 15 minutes, but any specific comments or questions? And again, we'd like as much of this to continue offline in the form of the listserv to be able to have people ask and say, if you're having this challenge, you know, how have you overcome it? Or you haven't overcome it, you have a problem, or for sites that have overcome this, even though they may be on a different EMR, who did you have to, and this is more of an operations issue, who did you have to engage at your institution in the IT department to get this report built? How did you, you know, logistically get this set up? Any other lingering comments or questions related to this?
Dr. Gluck.
This is Betsy at WakeMed. Is there an opportunity for us to identify our EMR for each of the facility sites so that we could quickly know where resources are?
And I think that's a fantastic idea, and I don't see any reason why we couldn't. Shilpa, it would be great maybe if we could collect that so that those places that are on like-minded EMRs that are using the same terms. Now, again, I will say, for example, I'm on Epic. We do not have model build, so we did a lot of customization. So even though we may be on the same vendor, there may be different views or ways in which reports have been built. But I do think it's, at the very least, very helpful to have people understand for their inpatient data, and in many cases their outpatient data if you're on the same EMR, who have you been able to engage in your own institution? I think that's a great idea.
Thank you.
And I know there was another comment.
Yes, Dr. Gluckman. This is Paul Kelly from St. Mary's in Waterbury, Connecticut.
How are you?
Yeah, good. How are you?
Good.
On the listserv that is pending, is it possible for us to share hospital size and our regions? In other words, are you an urban, suburban, or rural hospital, and what size are you? There may be solutions to some of the challenges that we have that are unique to these characteristics that we could learn from each other. And whether or not our hospitals are in the process of establishing relationships or merging with other hospitals in areas that we can learn from others that have gone through that process already. We are a relatively small hospital in an industrial northeast city, and I don't know how much of what the folks in Los Angeles are going through apply to what we see every day. It might help us to share that information as well.
It's a great point, and I think some of the solutions that come up with may or may not be applicable institution. So we'll take that offline as a action item for us to make sure we're providing, ideally, the EMR systems that people are using, the size of the hospital, what geographic area that they're in, and whether they're centrally urban or they're more rural hospitals overall. And I think that speaks to some of the challenges in terms of continuity of care, follow-up. You think in a very siloed world that if you have your patients who live within a five-mile radius of your hospital, in some places where people travel 150 to 200 miles to get their care, and this has its own logistic challenges. So I think it's a great point. So one other direction I wanted to touch on, because I think it's been a challenge for many people that I've heard about, has been the ability to predict better who is at risk for readmission prior to discharge for heart failure and AMI patients. And individuals I know at Christiana and the group Angie down at Huntsville have made some headway in terms of doing this, to my best knowledge. And I wondered if the group at Christiana could speak to the reality of the fact that we have all have limited resources. We don't have limitless resources, and we want to ideally target limited resources and those people most likely to be in need of those resources, so those people who are at highest risk of readmission after heart failure, AMI. How have centers been able to identify those individuals in advance of discharge so that either more prompt follow-up, more intensive follow-up, better care coordination is happening, or more intensive care coordination, I guess I should say, is happening at those places? So I didn't know if the Christiana Group could share their experience with that overall, at least as a center that has identified maybe some solutions for this.
So it's Bill Weintraub. I could talk about this all day because it's a very complicated subject. So I'll just sort of give this a few minutes from the 50,000-foot level. We looked into the literature, and we're not satisfied with the literature on this. We felt I've been doing modeling for decades, and something I know a fair amount about. And we have a very strong statistical team here, and because we have this CMMI grant, we've been able to put together rather amazing data sets, and have statisticians dedicated to developing our own models. I think if you're going to use a published model, try and find one that's fully specified so that you can recalibrate it rather than just taking what it's in the literature. The published models generally are pretty poor for readmission, with C indices in the range of like 0.70 or even a little bit lower, 0.68. We've been able to develop models that are in the high 0.7 range. We're a little worried about their robustness and whether they're biased, but so far, we've been able to apply models that aren't quite that robust, that have a C-index of about 0.74. So what's a C-index thing? That's sort of, think of it as a quickie, is the percentage of time you're right. And if it's 0.5, it's no ability to predict. And if it's 1, it's perfect ability. So we implemented these models. So this is quite something that we not only have models, but we've implemented them, and we're using them to level the patients for how much care they get. So far, I'd have to say this is an imperfect thing. The other thing that we're doing is we have this software where we're doing machine learning, so we'll have continually updated dated models. Now, that's a new thing, and that's a big part of our grant, those models need to be validated, and we'll see. We're hoping that we can develop better models. The challenge is this: you can't give everything to everybody, but our models to predict who's going to be readmitted are historically pretty weak. The other thing is, when we go back and look at this, we find, as we call it hand-to-hand combat, that every patient is different, every patient needs different things, and it's extremely hard to predict what's going to happen to them. So this is just a huge challenge because we want to direct care to those who need it, and right now, so the bottom line on this, right now, despite a lot of hard work on really expert people, this is a work in progress.
And Bill, are you doing this similarly for both AMI and heart failure patients, or have you consolidated most of your efforts into one of those two groups?
Yeah, most of this is in the AMI, and we'll be moving into heart failure.
Great. And I didn't know if, Angie, in a different part of the country, a different cohort of patients, whether you guys have done similar things as well?
As far as risk stratifying?
Yeah. Are you implementing any sort of formal risk stratification mechanism to better identify who are the patients that may be at highest risk for readmission and thus target or tailor, as Bill had said, some of your therapies more intensively towards those patients?
No, sir. At this point, we've had a few discussions and, as previously mentioned, did a literature review and basically came to the same conclusion that there's no real strong evidence that any one tool is effective. So we're still going down that road, but have not chosen at this point to implement a tool.
Okay, great. And just broadly on the phone, are there any people out there from any of the different programs who have been able to somehow figure this out thus far? You know, just trying to share your experience and what you've been able to do in terms of predicting the risk. And again, the challenge that was brought up earlier is the patient cohort that's in Texas versus Delaware versus LA may be very different overall in terms of patients, and one model may not apply to another population. Just anybody who is doing this as a matter of routine and has seemingly figured this out more?
Ty, this is Dick Kovacs, and no, we haven't figured it out in Indiana, but I have a question for Bill Weintraub.
Yep. Hey, Dick.
And hi. Because, we've Yale and does the Yale model predict readmission mm-hmm. in Indiana or only in New Haven? I don't know. But, we've been looking at this for a while and in the hand-to-hand combat mode. But my question for you is that, so there are the readmissions that you see, and there are the readmissions that you may not see.
Right.
Do you have any advice on if you're looking at a risk model and you're validating it within your system, will these all track in the same direction? In other words, if you're fixing readmissions in your system, does it fix readmissions globally that you may not see, or how do you handle all that?
Yeah, so I mean that's a great question. If you're in a system where you have a very small market share, this is going to be, and you try and develop your own models, or even evaluate a model that you're getting from elsewhere, it's going to be extremely difficult to do and unreliable. So we have a couple of benefits in Christianity, because you'll something about our system. We have 85% market share. And the other thing is that we'll be bringing in our local health information exchange. Now, you have the opportunities because you have great health information exchanges in Indiana. If you can figure out how to bring in data from your health information exchange, then you can figure out all of the readmissions. And we're slated to have that go live in January to be able to bring in from our health information exchange readmissions elsewhere. For our CMMI grant, CMS has been extremely interested in our ability to pull this off, because this is no small task, as you know. So you're gathering, figuring out how you're going to really gather the data. That's where it's got to be. This is all in all, this is an extremely difficult task. I might say just also that when we really have our model down and we're going to publish this data, what I'll tell you is we will publish, because I'm feel very strongly about this, we will publish a fully specified model so that anyone who wants to use our model can easily do so.
Thanks.
Great. This is really helpful. Just one last area that I wanted to focus in on in the last few minutes, and have just someone share just to round out other challenges that have existed thus far. Another challenge seems to be setting up appropriate direction towards cardiac rehab. We all know that it's a class one recommended intervention for many of the patients that we see. Patricia, I think you're down at Advocate Sherman, and I don't know if you're on the call. I hope you are, and it would be great. I just didn't know if your experience with how to engage people more in cardiac rehab, getting people appropriate referrals and participation, it's another success metric that seems to be an area that a bunch of places struggle with.
Hi, this is Christina from Advocate Sherman Hospital outside of Chicago, Illinois.
Perfect.
We have actually engaged our cardiac rehab by having them come to our heart failure team meetings and kind of clarifying exactly what we want them to chart. And we also have a heart failure navigator seeing that in patients, and together we're just working together, and they get a list of who are the heart failure patients, and they see them before they are discharged, and they AMI patients as well.
Perfect.
And they document it in the EMR, and then also they are putting discharge instructions for the patient as well, like who to contact on their, we call it DPART, is their discharge instructions.
Great. And I would say, are there any other comments or about how people have been able to more successfully get people to get A, referred to cardiac rehab, and B, participate in cardiac rehab? And I would say the heart failure piece is a relatively new thing with regard to cardiac rehab. Let's focus in just maybe on the MI population. Any other people who have been really successful in doing this?
So it's Bill again. I hate to sort of dominate so much of this, but we've worked really hard on getting people into rehab. So one of the things we've done is on the discharge order set, that's an opt-out. So all of our patients, MIs, revascularization, and heart failure, are automatically referred to rehab unless physicians opt out. Well, so none of them opt out. And so we have referrals now in the 90% plus range. Now, they don't all enroll, but they're all visited, and our enrollment rates have historically been very high by national standards, over 60%. But lately that's jumped up, and we're now actually enrolling, I mean, it's hard to believe, in 80% plus range.
That's amazing.
It's just a matter of, you know, of being on the ground and the hard work and offering great service.
Can I ask just a brief question? This is Nancy Albert from Cleveland Clinic. Because with heart failure, patients have to be post-discharge 6 weeks out and have to be on stable meds, et cetera, how are your cardiac rehabs accepting the orders that are coming immediately and there's a six-week gap and they're not sure what's going on in terms of the other piece about stability? How are you making that part work? Because I think that's been the challenge for many of us. We don't want to put it at discharge because it's too soon, and yet if the patient fails to come back or something else happens, then we're getting caught. So I'd love to hear how your cardiac rehabs are able to make that work, if you know the answer.
This is Christina again from Advocate Sherman Hospital in Illinois. I can speak to that briefly. Our cardiac rehab, they kind of have a list of patients or kind of their order, more or less, that, yes, we have a little waiting period that they will either follow up. But also, we have an inpatient heart failure clinic where when we are seeing them, you know, as time marches on, we will get them hooked back up with cardiac rehab.
And I hate to be the person who actually I have to be a timekeeper at some point as well. I'm overwhelmed with the engagement and participation, and I think there are probably two more hours that we could talk about a whole range of different topics, but I want to be respectful of people's time commitments overall. To me, this has been really successful, but I want to make sure it's successful for all of you. So one of my asks is if you could reach out to us through an email back and say, was this type of community call successful? If it was, how was it successful? What would you like to see different? I will say that the theme of this one was really tackling a very 30,000-foot view of what are some of the successes and what are some of the challenges that people are facing right now. But the hope would be to do a deeper dive as we go into very focused topics in the future. If it's literally how did you get people to get 7-day follow-ups for heart failure, then how did you get those patients to show up? Or how did you get those patients referral for cardiac rehab and how did you get them to show up? I think those are the things that we're going to have to dive into in much more detail, and we'll try and keep some future community calls more focused in very specific targeted areas. But I'd like to hear from people offline about what they liked about the call and what they didn't, and hopefully this will provide fodder to drive listserv engagement and participation with that overall. As an additional housekeeping issue, I just want to thank all of you for participating and remind you that the goal is, and I'm going to pull up a calendar, or Susan, you can speak to it, the goal is to have a face-to-face interaction with this initial cohort of individuals, at least cohort one, the initial cohort, if not the broader group, at ACC 15 in March in San Diego. We're tentatively looking, Susan, correct me if I'm wrong, at that Friday evening of the ACC meeting, and we would like any and all of you to participate or at least send delegates to participate. I think intermittent face-to-face interactions help to drive what will hopefully be a lot of discussion either in community calls or listserv participation in the interim.
Could I ask that those emails be sent out very soon because the calendars get very filled up at the ACC?
Your point is a great one. I totally understand, and we're working as hard, and I know Susan and her team are working as quickly as possible, along with Kathleen, to secure a date and time. So, Susan, I think your ask is a very reasonable one. We'll try and get that to you ASAP.
Thank you.
And with that, in the last minute, I'm going to turn it back to Shilpa. If there are any last comments, Shilpa?
Sure. Thanks, Dr. Gluckman, for moderating the call, and thank you to all the participants for making it extremely engaging. As a reminder, this call was recorded, and it will be archived on the Navigator webpage on the Quality Improvement for Institutions website. Next year, we will be continuing with these community calls and webinars as part of the Navigator activity plan in a very similar format, and we will be providing you all with a schedule of these calls in early January so we can get these on your calendar. We will also be starting the listserv, and Susan will be sending out instructions on how to utilize the listserv as a forum to share best practice, as well as sharing some of the tools and resources on our website. If you have any questions, you can reach out to either myself, Julie, or Susan, and we'll be happy to answer those questions. And again, we appreciate all of you for joining us today, and we hope you have a wonderful rest of your day and holiday season. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Shilpa. Thanks, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.